the afflicted people have often recognized, and more often should have, that this chronic problem arises from unchangeable and inflexible attitudes that are wrong. It is the result of living a life with a wrong basic pattern of existence. And of course, this is becoming more common all the time, with education failing entirely to emphasize the importance of integrities in life. Everything now is to get there quick, make money fast, and run a computer. Without these great gracious factors, life is unimportant. Actually, education is not doing what it should. It is not helping a person to realize that he is responsible for his own conduct. An education that gives no inspiration undoubtedly weakens character and gradually brings the individual down to ruin. So we have to take over all these problems ourselves. We have to take them over in any way and every way that we can. We take them over sometimes in prayerfulness, in which we ask divine strength for the changes that we should make in ourselves. Prayerfulness is, however, not very effective if it is not accompanied by a distinct and definite effort to achieve the improvement that we believe to be necessary. Deity helps those that help themselves. And the individual who is trying and striving in the name of truth will be sustained and supported by truth. But unless there is a dedication to the improvement of a situation, nothing changes. Chronic ailments very often slow down the patterns of life. Emotional ailments of all kinds, hates, fears, and so forth, certainly affects their circulation and cardiac activities. The individual who has a poorly organized life physically and has been subject to constant emotional stress, fears, hates, anxieties, and worries will surely have heart problems, will surely have troubles with the body, trying to live through the mistakes of the dweller therein. To dwell in the body is a burden upon the spirit. But the body is never really to blame. The body is simply an overcoat. It's simply a vehicle that we use for an adjustment in the material world. The body in and of itself is a very natural, healthy, kindly thing. But by the time we afflict it for generation after generation, and by heredity inherit a mass of delinquencies, the body comes to be uneasy. Now, no medicine can really correct this, because almost every medicine has to destroy some function. It has to slow down the worries by slowing down the thinking, and this is not the good answer. The individual, having inherited a body that has some aptitudes and some abilities, can consider himself to be a small god ruling over a little universe which is himself. Now, it's not such a small universe, if you want to consider it correctly. There are more life units in the average human body than there are living things on the earth. One body. Millions and billions of living units that must work together for the salvation of the body. Over this is God. God in this case being the self that inhabits the body. This self has all kinds of privileges and opportunities. It can be a good and conscientious leader, serving wisely and lovingly the needs of the body. It can be a good master of builders and workers. It can be a great inspiration. It can regulate the conduct of the body so that it never becomes involved in dangerous pursuits. It also can prevent the individual from destroying his own body by intemperance. For intemperance in the body of man is something like the Atlantic deluge on the face of the earth. All of the things that are necessary to our survival can be controlled, and can be controlled by the master of the show. But if the self within this body is determined to use it for only the gratification of personal attitudes, if this individual will destroy rest, will lose his sense of humor, which is very dangerous, and will one way or another discourage and dissipate the body's functions, he will be sick. He will be sick because he has broken the rules that the body says it must keep. So in all the things we do in life, in business and everything else, we are constantly breaking rules. And then in the newspaper a little later we hear about bankruptcies and great losses and various disasters to the life of the person. We also find now natural disasters. We find, as we do today, constant references now to floods, typhoons, earthquakes, plagues, pestilences are everywhere. And all these things together seem to add up to something. I know that long years ago, I'm trying to make a research project on the correlation between earthquake phenomena and war. And there seems to be a definite relationship. Nearly always earthquakes are associated or very closely connected with social upheavals. Why, we do not necessarily know exactly, but there is some kind of a magnetic relationship between natural phenomena and the human being. I think this is well brought out in a very cute little article saw on the paper not long ago, that there was suddenly a complete loss of catfish in Japan. No one could buy a catfish. And when they searched into the matter a little ways, they found out that this catfish is the great Japanese earthquake warner. The catfish is the first to know that an earthquake is going to happen. So there was a report out seismologically that an earthquake threatens, and everybody went out and buys catfish. And they keep it in a little bowl at home, and they feed it regularly, and they watch it. And if this little catfish becomes very happy and flutters around in a perfectly natural way, all is well. But if it gets nervous and disturbed and jumps up and down in the tank and becomes obviously distraught, the earthquake will follow in a very short time. This is perhaps something a way of judging about Earth, that nearly all nature has ways of estimating approaching earthquakes. Now, if this is true, then is it not quite possible that there is a psychic connection between emotional conduct, visible circumstances, human attitudes, and seismic disorders? If the catfish gets unhappy and an earthquake follows, then we can say, or might be able to say, when mankind becomes unhappy and confused, a war follows. Wars and pestilences seemingly are simply the outcomes of some magnetic relationship between the individual and nature. We find them always increasing, and we now find a new type of earthquake, and that is terrorism. Terrorism is probably one of the last and ultimate forms of the proof of the failure of perspectives and circumstances. Here we have a race most highly developed in science and many other fields that is unable to correct or accomplish its own morality. These things we have to bear in mind. And while we can't do all about them all the time, we must realize that a temper fit is an earthquake in the body. We must realize that it is a highly detrimental thing. That it's something that is happening to us as a direct result of an unreasonable attitude, an unreasonable relationship with life, or the breaking of natural laws, which has forced nature to resource in trouble. We must realize all the time that plagues and pestilences arise in the body. We know what happens when the body is subjected to cocaine. We know what happens when it is subjected to marijuana. We know these things are what they are. But above everything else is the grim determination to do exactly as we please. Now, most people don't go to that extreme with it. They will not sacrifice willingly and knowingly life or health just to do what they please. But if the individual does what he pleases, and what he pleases is not right, he is bound to have trouble. And no amount of flavor that is pleasant will take care of the factors that have caused the trouble. Therefore, each person must recognize that there is only one way in which he can assure himself of a maximum bodily support for his mental and emotional life. And that is that he is a good ruler over his body, that he takes proper care of it, that he does for it that which it needs, that he does not dissipate it, that he does not open himself to contagions and diseases simply because of carelessness or indifference. That if he does not think straight, he is going to suffer. And wherever he breaks the Ten Commandments, suffering gets in there somewhere. Every nation of importance in the whole world has had its equivalent of the Ten Commandments. They represent not necessarily the will of God in words imposed upon a prophet on the crest of Sinai. The Ten Commandments are man's natural realization over a period of thousands of years that affects follow causes as the wheel of the cart follows the foot of the ox. Whatever we do has its natural and inevitable consequence. Therefore, we have Ten Commandments. And we also have additional commandments given by Christ. We have the Ten Commandments in China, in India, in Persia, in Egypt, in Greece, and Rome. In most cases, disregarded. And as the disregard grew greater, the countries fell. Because these inevitable rules have to be obeyed. Now, the Egyptians were a little more generous in this matter. They weren't satisfied with 10 or a dozen commandments. They had what was called the negative confession of faith, and it is found in the papyri of the Book of the Dead, which is more really the book of the coming forth by day, for it means it's the book that is placed with the body in the tomb when the spirit goes forth into the green valleys of Amenhotep. But in any event, that the spirit has to stand before the judgment of Osiris, where the scales and the balances stand, and he must make the confession of faith. And if he lies or contradicts himself or misstates something, the jury of assessors, from which our jury system later came, bear witness to this. And if his crimes are slight, he may be forgiven. If they are great, he must return to the world and try again. But in this confession of faith, he has to admit any fault that he has. And he also has to swear under oath as a spirit waiting for immortality, in which no longer any substitute gives any value whatsoever. He has to say, in my life, I have never hated a human being. In my life, I have never dishonestly dealt with a human being. In my former life, I swear that wherever there was suffering, I did all I could to help. That I owe no man anything, that I have never borrowed money at usury, that I have never failed to pay my debts, that I have never failed to worship the gods, that I have never failed to keep the peace. All of these things, up to over 100 items, must be met before the soul can go into the blessed regions. Now, this is a little extravagant, perhaps, a little more than is absolutely necessary, but it meant that way back 5,000 years ago, the condition of human life, here and hereafter, is based upon a code of solid integrities. These integrities are the basis of right action. That the individual who has never failed to support his parents, who has never failed to guard and guide the lives of his children, all these things he has to affirm and the assessors, who have all kinds of metaphysical eyes to see things, can instantly detect any error or any falsification that he makes. So this is perhaps an ideal statement of Earth and its ultimate, man's destiny carried forward into the infinity. But the fact remains that these codes of conduct, where kept, protect nations, where broken, nations fall. The decline and fall of the Roman Empire is set forth by Gibbon as a good example of this. It shows how little by little a strong and upright people gradually deteriorated into luxury and dissipation and were gradually overwhelmed by barbarians who were still clean. We have this today, except that we are short of barbarians. We are no longer have other tribes that are going to come in. If anything goes wrong now, it must be ourselves doing it to ourselves. But the fact remains that health, happiness, security, integrity, and a proper relationship with life demands self-discipline. It demands that we learn to do those things which are right and do them now. And it's very unpleasant and disillusioning to see selfishness masquerading as religion, self-interest, and ulterior motives supported or sustained by so-called quotations from Scripture, to find that the individual uses these principles not to improve himself, but in one way or another to avoid them and try to force them on others. It's absolutely necessary for this generation to find itself in a way that it can then turn to other things. The moment the individual becomes integrated and no longer supports or advocates or endures the corruptions of his time, he becomes, in a sense, free. He may lose his opportunity for great wealth. He may not be the one that is promoted to the highest position. But he is the individual who is gradually changing himself into a citizen of eternity. He is a person who is living in the true universe as it is, a universe of integrities, a universe of honor. He is preparing himself for infinite citizenship in an infinite plan of things. Whereas those who are not so dedicated must in due time return and stay with it until they awaken to these values. Now these values are not going to all awaken at once, even in one person. They're going to grow slowly as the individual begins to appreciate and understand his real needs. They're going to become more and more obvious to him as he grows. If he takes the first step towards self-improvement, the second step will be easier and more obvious. All the way along, he is in the position, as soon as he so desires, to realize that his time in this world is brief. And though he may return a number of times, even altogether it will be brief. But he is here to become aware of the infinity of his own inner life. He is here to know that a divine power lives in him, and that this divine power is crucified every time he corrupts himself. That it is necessary for him, therefore, to protect this being within him from that personality which is indeed a holy sepulcher, from which that being must rise triumphant through the accomplishment of discipline and integration and illumination. Now, illumination is a term in religion which has many meanings. Some consider illumination to be a form of clairvoyance or second sight. Some consider illumination to be a mystical experience involving values completely out of this world. Some regard it as the highest possible experience of religious values. But illumination, what it is finally and all summed up, is the complete acceptance and realization that our destiny is in our own hands. Its illumination is the realization that the path that we should follow is the path which will bring us in the end to reunion and identity with the divine being. That illumination is the revelation of our own need and how it can be solved. It is the statement of an internal presence which breaks through for a moment and gives us a message that we must never forget. Plotinus, the Neoplatonist, said that he had illumination for only a few seconds twice during his lifetime, but that these 2 or 3 seconds of really internal, full comprehension of the entire pattern of things became so important that they could never be forgotten, and nothing could ever be done contrary to them, because there was the inevitable stamp of eternity upon them. And in the presence of that, all earthly pressures instantly faded away. The person starting out now with the hope of improving health can start with little ordinary things, a little greater integrities, a little greater sincerities. Sincerity is the most powerful force. When the individual is totally sincere, he is seldom completely wrong. He is always trying to do something better. Sincerity is lack of ulterior motive. An ulterior motive is one of the deadliest of the sins. If we have all kinds of little corruptions floating around in our natures, we're going to have heartaches, headaches, we're going to have high blood pressure, we're going to have all kinds of things, because these attitudes actually damage the little cells and lives within ourselves. The human body is a strange magnetic field. It is a field of infinite life in motion. The human body is a field for a great magnetic sphere which surrounds it. The human body is tied to all of its parts by magnetic pressures and by attitudes. The magnetic field is in many colors. And as you study the situation very carefully, you make some interesting discoveries. With every mood that the individual has, the colors of the magnetic field change. They can be the colors of rainbows. They can be beautiful shades. Or if the individual is jealous or nagging or combative, dirty mad colors come in, dull, unpleasant, storm-like appearances. And in this magnetic field, as in a small universe, great thunderstorms can arise, lightning can flash, torrents and torments spring up. The purgatory seems to flare in the very atmosphere. All of these things are the result of the individual misusing his own abilities and powers. The magnetic field is a kind of psychic thermometer which tells how near the truth he is. And wherever there is a departure from truth, these magnetic currents are disturbed. And wherever they are disturbed, organs are disturbed, particularly the endocrine system. And where the endocrine system is disturbed, all the physical functions become disturbed, disordered, and sick. Therefore, an individual who is wrong is bound to be sick at something. He's mad, mentally sick, emotionally sick, physically sick, psychologically sick. He is either healthy because he is right or unhealthy because he is wrong. The great problems of life come as we don't always quite understand a statement attributed in the Bible, namely that it is not that which goeth in at the mouth, but that which cometh out of the mouth that defileth a man. It sounds as though, even by best dietitians, it should be the opposite. But it is right, because that which comes to us from the inside, from the outside, is not our problem. It is something which would meet with the best that we have. But what comes out of ourselves, out of our hearts, our minds, our bodies, our thoughts, these things, if they are wrong, they are the things which destroy or damage the human being. Every unkind word that is spoken to us is carried by someone, but not by us. But every unpleasant or destructive word we pronounce is ours. and we must live with it until we transmute it. And the great alchemy of life, to my mind, is the power to transmute the inabilities and incompletenesses and the infirmities of ourselves into eternal assets. This transformation is the regeneration of the individual. This was the great secret of mysticism. This was the secret work of the Rosicrucians and the alchemists and all of the ancient secret societies. Everything had to do with the individual gaining the power to discipline himself, to rise above his own weaknesses, and to become a living image of truth in a world disordered. And if we do this, we have the natural compensation. We find that we are allowed to face life in an entirely different way. And no matter what happens, happy or unhappy, we will face it. And we'll find in the end a joy that can never be found from a mistake. Now we watch the economic and political processes going around us today. They are rather pathetic. They are tiresome. They are wearisome. They frighten us. And we don't know what's going to happen next. But actually, the person who is integrated, who is really at peace with themselves, who lives in a realization of the presence of the divine in all things that happens, is able to realize that he should not forget the presence of the divine in the things he doesn't like. It is easy enough to think that if all people lived well, developed and in peace and served each other nobly and generously and kindly, that then we'd have the utopia. And that anything less than that is something that we have to accept as a terrible thing. Actually, the things that happen to us are not terrible things. They are merely our own birds coming home to roost. They are the things we have done returning to us. When we stop causing trouble, trouble stops. But this trouble that we have is a great inspiration to get over it. In the last 2 or 3 years, there has been more movement towards individuals taking on the responsibilities of life. There are more efforts to find peace, not by law, but by people gathering in contemplative integrity. There are more efforts to reform education. There are new attitudes towards law, to science, and to philosophy. And philosophy, which for the last decade or two has been very moribund, is apt to come to life again. We don't have much in philosophy because it is nearly all in the field of experimental thinking. But the old classic works are coming back. I've noticed in catalogs that books that have been out of print, very valuable books, that have been out of print for 100 years, are now coming back for the dozens. Everyone is beginning to be interested in the thinking and the deep believing, the loving, the hoping of the great world family. And that modern reading, with its very tempestuous iconoclasm, is of no value to us in our needs. What we need is to find our roots again in the wisdom literature of our race and find in all the things that we do everything that is inspiring and clinging to it. Actually, in this field of thinking, of constructive reorganization, there is a tremendous increase, and every bombing, every massacre is bringing the day of wisdom closer. And as Krishna at the Battle of Kurukshetra in India, when he appeared to the charioteer Arjuna, the prince of men, Arjuna said, "How shall it be that I can go and make war to my own family? For I see the army drawn up and my own family is there waiting to attack me, and I am waiting to attack them." And Krishna appeared in a vision at that moment and reminded the young prince, he said, "Do not fear. Never the living can die. Nothing can be anything but change. No one will ever kill anyone. It is all a great dream world, a world of physical factors which we have made real. when the great world of beauty that we should have made been making real has been ignored. All these things that are happening are dreams. Those who die in battle will live in peace. Those who do all these things will rise again, wiser, a little better, a little more noble, a little more unselfish. And that these things are all shadows, phantoms, passing, the inevitable consequences of man's inhumanity to man. But out of it all will rise the one great humanity acceptable to God. All these things we have to face, but in daily life most of us do not face the worst of it, but we can worry about the worst of it. But the most important thing is not to worry, but to make sure that in our personal actions and our personal thoughts and attitudes we see the truth, we believe in the truth, we decide to live the truth, and we have not a hope based upon phantoms, but an absolute certainty that in the great plan of things, everything works together for good. Out of all the confusion, the chaos, the suffering, and the pain, comes a great solution, and it is for that reason that we were created. We were created to grow and to finally become conscious of our divine birthright and conscious of our place in an infinite plan that is governed not only by the wisdom of God, but by the love of man to man and the truth that we hope gradually to make manifest. The whole thing is not one to get all sick and sad about. It is a thing that we must accept and transmute ourselves into the realization that we are in a universe that is not the object and subject of infinite human vicissitudes, but that man ultimately must follow the path that was his in the beginning. Out of this great materialistic urge for success has come a great disaster. And it will continue as long as man puts the wrong things first. But when he realizes the facts of things, when he realizes the truth, he will ascend to be greater than the angels. He is here to learn, but it must be the hard way, because it is constantly fighting his own negative, inherited dispositional trends and characteristics. But if you want to be healthy, you want to get over the pressures of the time, you must take a larger look and see beyond all the tyrannies of human relationship the magnificent and eternal love of God for everything that lives. For all of this is going together to bring about this golden time we look for, a time which will be better than anything we have ever known. But each of us must wake up as individuals and begin to understand and see what it's all about. Well, thank you very much.